Welcome to Boss Files. I'm Poppy Harlow. The focus of this episode is an industry hit so hard by the coronavirus outbreak, restaurants, and the millions of people around the world who rely on them for their livelihood. With most restaurants around the country ordered to shut down, the National Restaurant Association says that in the United States alone, the restaurant industry could suffer a $225 billion loss in just the next 3 months. In a few minutes, I'll speak with my childhood friend Eric Dayton, the owner of the Bachelor Farmer Restaurant and Marvel Bar in Minneapolis, about how he's trying to do the best he can for the nearly 100 employees he had to lay off while finding a creative solution to help some of them get back to work.
It's daunting when you think about the scale of the challenge we're facing. The number of people who've filed for unemployment just in the past week here in Minnesota is approaching 100,000, so it's pretty overwhelming, but I think we're trying not to let that deter us.
But first, I talked to Danny Meyer, who runs more than 20 restaurants here in New York City, and of course, who is the founder of Shake Shack, and Chef Thomas Keller, who you know from Bouchon Bakery, French Laundry, and several other restaurants across the country. Together, they've had to lay off more than 3,000 members of their staff, essentially overnight.
I've been touched by the number of people who were laid off, who faced the worst news they never expected to hear, who have shown grace, and who have said, just please stay in touch and please let us know when it's safe to come back, and we're there for you.
Here's our conversation.
Why I wanted to have you guys on is because I want more light shed on the huge restaurant industry and all of the people in our country who rely on jobs, whether it's in the kitchen, whether it's front-facing servers. They are out of work, out of a paycheck, and desperate right now. And I know you are both individually doing what you can to help them, so we'll get into that. But I really appreciate you both coming on together. I know you're longtime friends and peers. And Danny, you guys run over 20 restaurants. Also, of course, there's the whole Shake Shack entity of it. And then Thomas, you run 8 restaurants. And of course, you have all of the wonderful Bouchon Bakeries as well. So let's just begin with you, Danny. What is the state of your business right now? Because overnight, you had to shutter everything.
Yeah, the state of our business is that we're dealing with this multi-pronged crisis, which is that it's dangerous for people to do what we exist for, which is to be with other people. And it's dangerous for our staff members to leave their homes right now and to come do what they love doing, which is to cook great food and serve people. And so that means no business. And what that also means is that we're dealing with the emotional anxiety of people who live for the purpose of making other people feel good and now are anxious about whether or not they can pay their own rent and put food on their tables. So, yeah, we're trying to figure out how to do something from a whole new playbook. You know, 9/11, Thomas, I know that you were a star during 9/11. That was the biggest body blow our city had ever taken. But at least within a week or two, the restaurants actually had the antidote to what the city needed, which was the hope provided by being able to bring people together. And now we don't have that up our sleeves because it's dangerous to do that.
Danny's point is well taken. We're certainly dealing with something we never have. There are over 15 million people in our profession. And that's just in the restaurant profession. We can't forget all of those who supply us. I mean, all of our fishermen, all of our farmers, all of our foragers, all of our gardeners, the laundries. I mean, everybody who actually, you know, supports a restaurant as well, not just in the restaurant profession, but who are also supporting it, is hundreds of thousands of people. And many of them, you know, are small farmers who, you know, make butter. And they only have 3 or 4 customers in America. And so it's hard for them. It's even harder for them to try to continue to be part of a restaurant profession, which is completely on their knees.
Danny, this isn't something you prepare for in business school, in any scenario, right? There's no case study for this because it's completely uncharted territory. What are you doing? I know you're totally giving up your salary immediately and indefinitely. What else are you guys doing to try to help all these folks that are out of work now?
Well, we've set up a 501c3 fund for our employees, which we call Hugs for USHG. And of course, being a 501c3, it comes with lots and lots of rules and regulations, but that's okay. We can get beyond it. What it means is that people will have the opportunity to apply for funding for what is now the rainiest day ever. We had been in the process of setting it up anyway, because it seemed that on an annual basis, 3 to 5 employees would have some catastrophe, like a fire in their home or a flood or a hurricane, or they lost the breadwinner of the family. But we never anticipated needing something for everybody. So we did the first thing we could do, which was to seed that fund with some of our own compensation, all of mine and a lot of the senior C-level people in my company. And then furthermore, we've been selling gift cards with 100% of the revenues going into that fund as well. And so we're hoping that this fund could be used for someone who said, I want to apply to extend my health coverage. We just need help from the government, though, because we cannot do this all by ourselves. I think something that your listeners may not know is that our industry, 660,000 restaurants in America, and most of them are independents, ma-and-pa restaurants, one-off trattorias and pizzerias and, ice cream stores. And, unlike the airlines and the banks and, the big auto companies where there's 4 or 5 names and we know them all, we don't necessarily speak with one voice. And yet the impact that we have on the economy in terms of employment, it's massive. And so I think it's just important to understand the role that restaurants play, not just in your life when you go out to celebrate events, but really the economic fabric of the country.
Absolutely. And we'll get into your call for what you're calling enlightened leadership, Danny, in a minute. Thomas, you also have an announcement to make in terms of what you guys are doing if you don't get it, until you get something from some government.
Absolutely right. I think we're all dealing with the same thing. And as Danny's done, we have the Keller Restaurant Relief Fund, which is also a 501c3. Again, in the same vein that what we're trying to do is support those in need, whether it's with housing, medical, childcare, adult care, the basic necessities of their life. We've also, our small community have set up a more or less, I call it a soup kitchen, where, our team members can come 3 times a week and get food free of charge that we're preparing. And
in one of your restaurants?
Yes, in one of our restaurants. So we're getting a lot of support from our suppliers who have a lot of food that they're not selling through at this moment of time. So they're happy to donate it. The other part of the community that we touch that come to our restaurants here in Yountville or here in Napa Valley, and dealing with some of the elderly who can't, get to the grocery store, who can't cook for themselves. So we're trying to find ways to deliver food to them. We have cooks. We have young people who want to volunteer delivery, cooking food, tending the gardens. They all want to make an impact. And that's the beautiful thing about our profession, is that we all come together.
I want to note, I'd be remiss not to note, anyone who can afford to eat at both of your restaurants, for the most part, are incredibly lucky, right, to be able to do that. There are so many food insecure children around the world, but in America right now. Is there something innovative, Danny, that you think could be done in a moment like this, when the food that's still being produced can't be served in these restaurants, to find a way where it goes even more to organizations that get to the people that need it most?
Well, absolutely. And I really think that that's going to have to come directly from pre-existing perishable and non-perishable food providers. Because I, as much as our hearts want to be cooking food in our kitchens, we're being told as of this minute that it's not safe to have people come out of their homes and take public transportation and be within 5 feet of each other. And I don't think I've ever seen a kitchen where people were not, 2 inches away from each other. So we cannot wait to exercise that hospitality muscle where we're taking care of people outside of our restaurants. But I do think that there are lots and lots of feeding organizations throughout the country. And I do believe that they are uniquely set up. And one good piece of news is from speaking to some of them, that the number of of donations that are coming in right now has actually increased quite a bit. So I would just urge your listeners, you know, whether it's a national organization like Share Our Strength, No Kid Hungry, or a more local organization like City Harvest, or God's Love We Deliver, those are in New York City. But throughout the country, there are fantastic organizations that need your financial support, but they're in a great position to deliver food directly to kids and adults.
David Chang, Momofuku, said, he tweeted, "We are so effed without a massive stimulus bill." Tom Colicchio, quote, "This is the end of the restaurant business as we know it." Is that where we are, Thomas? Do we need a massive stimulus bill bailout?
Well, we certainly need help. There's no question about that. And, you know, we've seen in the history of our country, whether it's the airlines or the auto industry or even the financial industry, when there's trouble, there's some aid and some help to help them get through the difficult times. As Danny mentioned, it's hard to imagine the restaurant profession because there are so many restaurants throughout America. And it's really the small ones that are going to need the most help. But yes, you know, some kind of government aid is due, and something's going to have to happen in order for us to maintain these restaurants, which are really the fabric and cornerstone of our communities. We want to be able to open our restaurants once this passes. And if we lose the opportunity to do that, then the effect that it's going to have on the economy is extraordinary. The restaurant profession produced almost $900 billion in sales in 2019. It represents about 4% of the United States GDP, which is huge. So we want to make sure that that we somehow collectively support this industry so that we can come out of it and be stronger than we are right now.
Danny, you said if there were ever a time to call on government for enlightened leadership, it's now. What's your message to Congress, to the White House?
Well, I would call it enlightened self-interest, because Congress, no matter what side of the aisle you're on, you want the fullest possible economy, you want the fullest possible employment, and you want the richest possible cultural fabric. And I just have to say, I'm making a plug for our entire industry. Whether you're a small restaurant in Arkansas or a large restaurant in Los Angeles or Chicago or New York, you're part of what makes life worth living. You're bringing people together to talk, to be together, to celebrate, to, you know, to do what we're doing right now. You know, if I could name one silver lining in this whole thing, the fact that yesterday I got to speak to Thomas on the telephone when he and I don't typically pick up the phone and just say hey to each other. And that goes for five or six other chefs in our industry. And everybody, whether it's your family members, whether it's your friends, the people in your business who are now working apart from one another, but it's actually reminding us how crucially important it is, economically aside, to just emotionally come together. And I think that's the role, even over and above the economic impact, that restaurants will always play in our society. And I cannot wait to get to bring back people who work so hard, not for a lot of money, but because they love cooking for other people.
Danny, the fact that you made a bold move handful of years ago now to eliminate tipping, raise wages, is that going to impact the workers in terms of, will they be able to claim more for unemployment?
Yes, they will. And that part feels good. You know, there's an adjusted minimum wage for tipped employees that is lower than with the exception of a handful of states on the West Coast, that's lower than the actual minimum wage. But once we eliminated tipping, we obviously began to pay well above the minimum wage. And that's the basis upon which our now former employees can be claiming their unemployment benefits. So I don't feel good about the fact that they're there, but I feel better that they'll have a higher opportunity to claim.
Danny, is there an anecdote you can share? I don't know what the hardest conversation you had to have this week. I mean, I've gotten to meet some of the amazing individuals that lead your restaurants, and you know, I just can't imagine how it's been for you having to tell them, you know, this is over for right now.
You're going to make me cry just saying that. There's been so many hard conversations. And you know what I've been touched by? I've been touched by the number of people who were laid off, who faced the worst news they never expected to hear, and who have shown grace and who have said, just please stay in touch and please let us know when it's safe to come back and we're there for you. And, you know, my heart goes out. My heart goes out. There are people who are soon going to be having a baby and we're looking forward to the happiest month of their entire lives. Anyway, my heart goes out to people who work so hard constantly and who now can't. And we can't wait to get them back.
Thomas?
I think the other thing, too, is just the uncertainty of it all. You know, we hear 2 weeks, we hear 4 weeks, we hear 6 months. I know school is closed probably until next fall. So we just don't really know. So it's hard to kind of share with your team any sense of comfort on when they're going to come back or what they're going to come back to. And I think that uncertainty for me is my biggest challenge is trying to comfort everybody during this process.
Without being able to say, we'll be better in a month
right.
or two or three.
Yeah, just have to continue to communicate with them, make sure that they understand you're thinking about them and that you're thinking about their best interests. You know, Danny, the funds that the restaurants are establishing now, they're all 501c3s. And it's great because we have a great community of people who want to support us and support our teams. And that's the most important thing to remember. You're supporting individuals, young people who've lost their jobs and who have no sign, have no prospects in sight for renewal of their jobs. It's not like they can go work somewhere else. They're done until this is all over.
Final message, Thomas, to anyone listening that doesn't work for either of you or in your restaurant, but is in this industry and has relied on it for their career. What's your message to them?
Well, I think first and foremost is stay safe. I think that's, you know, the overarching goal for us all. That said, we also have to take care of ourselves and each other, continuing to nurture one another in whatever way we can find. We want to make sure that our community stays emotionally connected to one another. And those are important things. I believe that the heart and the emotion of what we do is what drives us all. And if we can continue to uphold that and feed it, and then we'll be okay after we come through this process. Everybody that's out there will have a job and they'll have great choices for jobs. And we're really looking forward to that time.
Maybe we can have like a Zoom feast. You guys can cook and it could be a fundraiser and people could pay to be at your Zoom table or something.
That's
like
a
that.
Good idea. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, I'm in. Make sure you invite me and let's raise a lot of money for folks. Gentlemen, thank you. I know it's such a hard time. Good luck. We're rooting for the industry. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Poppy. Thank you, Danny.
Bye, Thomas.
After the break, we'll hear from Minneapolis-based restaurateur and entrepreneur Eric Dayton about his efforts to sustain workers in his community. So now we turn to Eric Dayton, the co-owner of the Bachelor Farmer restaurant and Marvel Bar in Minneapolis. He tells me how he's trying to help put his out-of-work employees back to work.
Hi, Eric. Thanks for doing this.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Poppy. Good to be with you.
Good to be with you, too. I wish it were under better circumstances, but this is the world we find ourselves in, and I'm excited to tell people about what you guys are doing.
Well, thanks for the opportunity.
So back a little bit of background here for our listeners. I yesterday got an email from you about what you guys are doing for the community in Minneapolis and for so many restaurant workers that are without a job now because of the coronavirus crisis. And I jumped on it. A background here, you and I have been friends since, I don't know, have we known each other since we were like 7, 8 years old, something like that?
I think that's about right. Yeah.
We both grew up in Minnesota, proud Minnesotans. And you are CEO of Askoff and Lason, but also co-owner of the Bachelor Farmer and Marble Bar in Minneapolis. And employ almost 100 employees, right? In the business and in the restaurant business?
That's right.
You had, about a week ago, you had to make the decision to completely close all of your food and beverage operations.
We did. We'd been talking about it for probably a week leading up to the decision. We finally realized it was the right thing to do for the health of our employees, but also for the health of the community. We made that decision on Monday, announced it, and shortly thereafter, the mayor of Minneapolis shut down restaurants and bars citywide, and then the governor of Minnesota followed later that evening with a statewide shutdown. So it all just happened unbelievably fast.
I think one of the scariest parts about this for so many of the employees in the restaurant industry that I've talked to is the unknown, in terms of we have no idea how long this is going to go on. For you guys, the owners and operators, obviously very uncertain, but for them, many of them work paycheck to paycheck. So let's talk about the good news here. What are you doing and where did this idea come from?
Well, you know, it was my first instinct as an owner was to think about what we needed to do for our team. But it was really inspiring to see our team jump to action, led by our executive chef, Jonathan Gans, to think about what he and others could do for the community. And it was just to see that that was where their minds went in a moment when, you know, their livelihoods were being impacted was really inspiring. And so he, along with a couple other chefs and restaurants in the community, came together with Second Harvest Heartland, which is a Minnesota-based food bank, but one of the largest in the country, and put together in really short order an initiative to start creating prepared meals that could be served and distributed around the state for families in need. So this is a new initiative for Second Harvest. It's certainly something that's new for us. Mm-hmm. It's only 5 days in, but they're already up and running with what is called the Minnesota Central Kitchen.
So people understand, because I think people's initial thought might be, okay, so they're taking, you know, they're volunteering, they're helping to make meals for those in need. But this goes beyond that. This is actually about putting those restaurant workers, so chefs of every level and servers and anyone that worked in the kitchen or front facing, trying to put them back to work and actually pay them while giving meals to those who need it.
That's right. That's something that's just started to mobilize in the last couple of days. Initially, all of these chefs and cooks who were stepping up were planning to do so as volunteers, even though many of them had just lost their jobs. So again, just incredibly selfless on their parts. But I saw this as an opportunity to put some of these, really talented hospitality professionals back to work doing what they do best, which is serving others, serving the community. And so we've now started a fundraising effort that we're calling Northern Hospitality to try to bring in additional dollars for Second Harvest to be able to provide wages for these cooks as they're contributing their time. And so we're just 24 hours into that fundraising effort. We'll be able to announce that we've raised $60,000. In the first 24 hours. And so Incredibly inspired by the response of the broader community. I think, you know, so many times it's the hospitality industry that steps up to support the community, whether it's, you know, donating a gift card or, you know, participating in a charity fundraiser. And now the tables have turned and it's the hospitality industry that really needs the community support. And to see the way that the community has rallied around this industry and, you know, their favorite servers and bartenders and restaurants. And it's really pretty incredible.
Wow. Some of this was actually inspired by Jose Andres.
Very much so. I mean, it's not directly affiliated with World Central Kitchen, but Jose is actually someone who we've gotten a chance to meet through the Bachelor Farmer, and also who actually came to Minneapolis not long ago to give a speech. And our chef was at his presentation and was certainly inspired by what he heard. And so I think that was in the back of his mind when he started to think about how we as a community could respond to this crisis here in Minnesota.
Can you scale this, Eric? I mean, I know, look, you know how to build businesses. That's what you do as an entrepreneur. What's your vision for scaling this, and how many restaurant employees do you think you can maybe put back to work?
Well, it's daunting when you think about the scale of the challenge we're facing. The number of people who've filed for unemployment just in the past week here in Minnesota is approaching 100,000. So it's pretty overwhelming. But I think we're trying not to let that deter us. We hope that this can scale up to. There's one central kitchen up and running. Each central kitchen will employ about 50 full-time positions, and then be able to serve 2,000 people. So just in in the past 5 days. This has scaled up to prepare 2,000 meals a day to send out in the community. And we hope, if funding allows, that we'll be able to scale this up to 5 central kitchens serving 10,000 prepared meals a day and employing, we hope, in excess of 250 positions that will be, you know, putting hospitality workers back to work. So it doesn't solve the problem in terms of the overall magnitude, but we're going to try to put a dent in it and do some good.
Yeah, well, it solves a number of problems. I mean, 250 people working versus not working, it's beyond the paycheck, as you know. I mean, it's about a sense of being needed and a sense of community, especially in a moment like this, and a sense of using your skills to help those, and all of those meals that they can give out is pretty incredible.
I think that's right. I think it's, you know, everyone, myself included, feels somewhat helpless in the face of this. And I think people just want to feel like they're doing something and contributing and participating and doing good. And so we'll you know, it'll start at a small scale, but hopefully this effort will you know, be alongside others. And, you know, hopefully we can all, you know, pull this off. We work together.
One thing that's important that I don't think is getting as much attention, it's one thing to lose your paycheck if you're a chef or working in the kitchen or a server. It's another thing to lose your health insurance. But that's something that you guys are stepping up to meet the challenge, at least for a few months here, as long as you can, so that your employees don't lose health insurance.
Yeah, that's right. We had to make some quick decisions about you know, how to take care of our employees. And as I said, that's where our heads went first. We've decided to fund 100% of health insurance for our entire team through the end of May. And then my brother, who's my co-owner in this business, we decided to fund payroll for the next month. And that's something that, you know, frankly, our business can't support. And I know a lot of businesses can't support that. And I know a lot of business owners I've been talking to wish, you know, are doing as much for their employees as they can and wish they could do more. But we made the decision to support payroll for the next month. We don't know how long this is going to last, but we at least wanted to help to, you know, ease the blow and ease the transition here to what, you know, it looks like might become a new normal. We don't know exactly what that looks like or how long it'll be, but we wanted to, you know, try to take care of our team through this crisis.
Finally, where can people help? If people are listening and they want to pitch in, they want to help with Northern Hospitality, help put these restaurant workers back to work with a paycheck, where can they go?
Yeah, I would steer them to 2harvest.org. It's the number 2harvest.org / Northern Hospitality. And that's where they can contribute to helping put hospitality workers here in Minnesota back to work.
Eric, this is great. You guys are doing it. I'm not surprised, but I'm thrilled to hear it. Good luck. Keep us posted.
Thanks, Poppy. Stay safe and stay healthy. Thanks for what you're doing.
Thanks.
If you enjoyed this episode of Boss Files, make sure to keep tuning in over the next several weeks as we talk to more business leaders about how they're coping with all of the uncertainty and the challenges presented by the coronavirus pandemic. You can leave us a rating or review on your favorite podcast app, and you can always find me on social media at Poppy Harlow CNN. I'd love to hear from you who you want to hear from on an upcoming episode. We'll be back soon with another episode of Boss Files. Thanks so much for joining us.
Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
You can now watch CNN's Five Things on Max. Each weekday, Kate Baldwin breaks down the five essential news stories in 5 minutes or less. She'll get you up to speed and on with your day. CNN's Five Things with Kate Baldwin, streaming weekdays exclusively on Max.